With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Treehouse, Saps Rising with Danny Baker and me, Louise Pepper. Episode 6, The Old Soft Shoe.
The old soft shoe. Give me the old soft shoe. It should be Frankie Vaughan's birthday, but it's not. He was very good at that. Very good morning to you, everybody. And here we go again with another 40-odd minutes of fun for old and young without the slightest hint of vulgarity.
No.
That's Lou Pepper on the other side of the table. There's much to discuss. We're going to, unusually for us, even six shows in, we've got a backlog of your contacts, emails, and everything else. If this is your first experience of the show, I hope the last one wasn't anyone's first experience of the show. That was a catastrophe. That was an outrage. Honestly, if anyone heard the last show, we've apologised enough. Stop on at us. We tried.
If we were like other shows where edited out anything that went wrong, it would have been 12 minutes long.
I think the one sentence that summed up the last show, now everyone's saying, oh, I'm going to listen to that one now. The one sentence that summed it up was, thank God we're not flying a plane here. I think that pretty much did it. But anyway, that's all behind us now because the quality goes in before the name goes on. Welcome to the treehouse. There is some business to do before anything else, this is where it's going to take us. It's Nostradamus's birthday. It's Nostradamus's birthday.
Okay.
Nostradamus. What do you know, Peps, about Nostradamus?
He predicted the future, didn't he?
Yeah, well, he did. He did. By the way, I bought this off of one of those royalty-free websites. Man, you're going to hear a lot of this. I'm not throwing $18 away. Yes, he did.
Mm.
But he did.
So we are saying he actually was good at it.
We waver with Nostradamus. We'll start the show properly in a minute. We've got a David Bowie email you're going to love. David Bowie at the moment is billed under Nostradamus, like Spinal Tap and the Puppet Show. Nostradamus did. I mean, the thing is, in this modern age where, you know, wonder is always explained.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes think, oh, the old quack. People like to believe it and it's all in the translation. It's not.
When was he?
1503.
Okay.
But he wrote his quatrains in 1555, of course. Did your mum ever get Old Moore's Almanac?
No.
I think he was the editor of Old Moore's Almanac. He edited that. Old Moore's Almanac was huge.
Isn't that in Back to the Future? Isn't that the thing that he gets some sort of thing, like, doesn't he, when he tries to work out the baseball scores and things like that?
I smile at how shallow we are. We take all of our information. We've gone from Nostradamus, one of the most, you know, revered seers and sages of the entire ages, and we're saying,
those things back to 80s films.
Well, anyway, Nostradamus today, in 1555, he was... sorry. Here we go. So that was my nose, everyone. Nobody knows his birthday. You can find different places. They think it's today.
Right.
But it doesn't matter when we're recording this, but today happens to be Friday the 13th.
Whoa.
Yes, it does. But other places give it. And I always like people who don't know when their birthdays are.
Mm.
There may be someone
listening. My granddad.
Your granddad, tell us about your granddad.
My granddad had three birthdays. My mum will correct me on this, but it was something like he thought he was the 6th of December 1908. Then he thought he was the 8th of December 1908, and it turns out he was the 6th of December 1906.
I love people who don't know.
And he could have retired 2 years earlier. That was the real. That was the real problem.
I just hats off to people who don't know when their birthdays. But anyway, Nostradamus. So,
1908.
And we look up, not down. You know, that's all we ever do. Here we are recording the day after the election. We look up, not down. But Nostradamus really could. Some of his quatrains are too on the nose. And I've looked, and this isn't the interpretation of them, or indeed the translation of them. His prediction of the Second World War is not...
In 1553?
In 1555, he actually did his quatrain.
Sorry, right.
And he put them out in different books. The first one went so well, he thought, ooh, I'm going to look into that boiling pot again. More, you know, it was more hits from Nostradamus, further hits from Nostradamus. Now, that's what I call Nostradamus. He had them all out.
10.
But this is typical, and it's not like one of those where you have to think, oh, does that symbolise that?
Mm.
A little bit of that. This is what he said about the Second World War. He said in the middle of the 20th century, this is what's going to happen. All of his quatrains are in centuries. 20th century. From the depths of Western Europe, a child will be born to poor people, who, by his tongue, will seduce a great troop. His fame will increase towards the realms of the East. Beasts, ferocious with hunger, will cross the rivers. The greater part of the battlefield will be against Hister. H-I-S-T-E-R. In a cage of iron will the great one be drawn, while the child of Germany observes nothing.
That's word for word?
That's word for word. H-I-S-T-E-R. Now, you can forgive him over four centuries away mishearing that or seeing a bubble where he should... And that's a pretty grim one. But that's not vague.
No! That's not one of those people you go and see who says something... I'm getting someone called Dave.
No. He had nothing to gain by that.
Wow.
People couldn't care less what happened in the 1940s back in 1555, I presume. Before we move on from Nostradamus, and we'll start the show properly in a moment, I promise you. Because I'm nothing if not the eye that never sleeps.
Yes.
So I'm researching this. And I noticed in some of his letters, one thing keeps popping up. The sly old dog. They call him Nostradamus, but it's Liberace, lad here for me. He said in one letter to the king, "I have heard the word prophet attached to me. I would not tribute that word to myself." A little later he wrote to him, "I reject the role of prophet." Elsewhere he wrote, "I in no way can to be attributed the title of prophet. And lastly, I am never foolish enough to claim to be a prophet." Oh, throwing the word, I think he does a bit too much there, Nostradamus. "I'm not a star. I'm just a guy with an act." Yeah, well done, Nostradamus. And so there we are, ladies and gentlemen. There are other ceremonies we may get round to this morning, but it's the treehouse, and your subjects, every single subject remains open. If you're listening to show one, not show five, all right, but show one, all the subjects remain open, so
yes.
You're never too late for these. What have we got there, Peps?
So to subjects today, number one, and this has been Rich Pickens, the only autograph you ever got. Number two, were you a monitor at school?
Yeah, I've got a load on that.
If so, of what?
You're running in your fingernails on your breast there. What's the story?
Well, at primary school, you took it in turns to be register monitor and milk monitor, so that's boring. Senior school, librarian.
Were you?
Yes.
Did you have a little enamel sign with librarian monitor on it?
I did, in yellow, which was the Whitby House colour. And I was head of house. Thank you.
Were you? That's
one off being head girl, thank you.
I mean,
is it the least surprising thing you've ever heard?
I was the register monitor for a while. I took the register. Man, did I like taking the register.
Oh, you took it?
Yeah.
Oh, register monitor in our school meant you just took it to Mrs. Sarson at the office after it was called.
I wasn't very shy as a kid.
No.
And I could read. And about the age of eight, Danny, would you like to take the register? Yes, I would. Atkins, Baker. Oh, here. Barnes, Biffin, Burridge, Byart, Hill, Howe. Shall I continue?
I never knew there was such power available.
I never looked down. I did it while looking at them. I could reel off the 32 kids without looking at them. Oakes. Is Oakes in? I can't see him, but I'll be bang.
Oh.
Boom. Yeah. No, yes. But we'll get round to
Ours
those.
I was just taking it to Mrs. Sarson.
You look horrified.
I am chagrined. is what that, we were is that all the fobbed off with?
Is that all the subjects we have?
No, Pepper? Sorry. 3, restaurants with very limited menus. Mm. 4, things that have been stuck to your head. And 5, surprising things in the middle of nowhere.
Just one thing I'll give you before the show starts, and it is going to start. This always freaks me out, this. Baby's kneecaps aren't attached. Your kneecap is not attached to any part of your body. Do you know? Your kneecap right now, it's not attached to anything. That makes you feel weird. Your kneecap is just there, floating in some sack. But honestly, your kneecap is not attached to anything. And babies are born without them. They grow them after a year. Isn't that weird?
It's a bit like how their head isn't all stuck together the fear of the soft spot.
It pulses as well, doesn't it? It pulses, that sort of thing. So give us something from over there, and here we go now. The show's properly starting, everyone. You may have had enough entertainment, but the show begins right now. Where you go, Peps?
This is from John Rogers. Mm-hmm. Here's a tale about getting possibly the only autograph a celeb ever gave. In the late 80s, my mum used to partake in some extra work in around Norfolk. Lots of TV shows visited the East, and Allo Allo were camped up, and mum was asked to be a French lady visiting a church. It was a long day of filming, and as she waited to be called to set, mum went round to collect some autographs for me and my brother. We had bothered her intensely the night before. Excuse me, would she mind? It's for my son's big fans and Julie. We got the late, great Gordon Kay, Carmen Silvera, Vicky Michelle, Sue Hodge, Arthur Bostrom.
Very good.
All happy to squiggle on mum's autograph book. Except one person. Excuse me, would you mind? Madam, he looked at her, I do not do autographs. This from Mr. Kenneth Connor.
Kenneth Connor wouldn't sign?
Oh, that is a shame, says my mum. I'm a Connor too, but I do understand. You're a Connor, he said. Yes, born one, said mum. Oh, well, madam, your book, said Mr. Connor, holding out his hands. And he wrote, from one Connor to another, Kenneth Connor.
Did he?
What a lovely thing to have. Problem is, mum's surname's Skinner. We've no idea what got into her, but we have a unique item of British comedy memorabilia somewhere in the loft.
Well, people who turn down autographs is always worth examining. Oh. Because George Harrison, I've got John Lennon's Spaniard in the Works signed by George Harrison. And Lennon's done a little doodle as well. I say I've got it, it's my sister's. She lets me look after it. But my friend went up to George Harrison at Wembley when I think the Eagles were playing Wembley in 75, 76. And my mate Paul, possibly even more than me, is and remains more besotted by the Beatles, as all civilised people are. Mm. George was waiting in the old Wembley Stadium. There was a lift that took you up to what passed as the executive lounge.
Oh, OK.
And he was just standing there with a few other people. And he thought, I'm going to do this. And he went over to him and said, George, would you mind signing this? It was the programme. And George said, yeah, I would. And they stood looking at each other. And my friend, like a salted snail, then had to go, that's so George, that's great. Yeah, I would. Oh. And the lift doors opened and away went George. Now, any you've got of those, please, out there, would you mind signing this, George? Yeah, I would. Here's an inadvertent theft. You didn't mean to nick it. As I say, even on this day, I'll say, as an old socialist, I stole a... several books from Foyles. Didn't mean to.
No.
I didn't mean to. Years ago, Foyles. Come on, statute of limitations. And I had them, you don't steal books.
They've had some years of struggle, and I think we now know where that can be placed.
Bless you.
They're all right now.
I just had them under my arm, and then a mate of mine ran into me in there and said, you know, Tony's outside, he's waiting for me. I said, Tony, and I went out into the street, started talking to Tony, and he convinced me, let's go into the Pillars of Hercules and have a half. And I looked down and I had these books, and you're not going to take them back in there, are you? No. Anyway, this, what I'm about to read from our correspondent, Dave Roberts, makes that seem like just absolutely the most beneficial thing anyone's ever done. It's sort of a Dave stole. After 25 years, I was a member of a charitable organisation, the Lions Club of Great Britain. We tried to do good deeds. I got involved with collecting people from hospital and taking them to and from appointments, etc. On Saturday afternoon, I picked up an old chap at the hospital in Chelmsford. I'd been given instructions that he would be waiting in reception with a card with his name on it. I got there, parked my car, found the fellow, pushed him in his wheelchair to my car, got him in, put the wheelchair in the boot of my car, and drove him about 15 miles back to his house. He told me to knock on the front door. His wife will come come out and get him. I did as instructed. His wife did duly come out, and she is pushing a wheelchair as she did. Now, I know, this is inadvertent theft. Pushing a wheelchair, she did. She put him in the wheelchair, thanked me, and went back indoors again. I drove off with his wheelchair in the back of the car. I just thieved a wheelchair. There's no other way of putting it. I drove around for a while, then went back to the hospital and left it in the front of reception and did a runner. CCTV was not common in those days. The terrible, that, as they say on the internet, that moment when you realise you've stolen someone's wheelchair. That's inadvertent theft. Thank you very much indeed, my friend. Something from you, Peps?
Well, we will go to another Dave, the beautifully named now, Dave Sturdy.
This, for people who don't know the show, and there's no reason why you should, we like to keep it quite tense at times, especially when we say we've got a caller. Because on the last show, I'm telling you, egg all over our faces. But as I, when I left here, some of the people who run this company, something else, they came up and said, you had some problems. I said, yeah, we did. He went, this place is built on an old Indian burial ground. So it's not entirely the fault of it, but sometimes the message doesn't get through. Let's try this. Hold my hand, Peps.
Okay.
Dave? Dave?
Morning. Good morning, Danny Louise. I'm here.
Oh, the spirits are good to us today. We don't need to have to get the Ouija board out because it was a catastrophe last time. I'll make light of it, but there were sackings all over the place. Something I'm not used to. Dave, good morning. What do you have for us, Dave? What's the story?
Good morning, guys. It's great to have you back, by the way.
Bless you. It's good to have you.
What I have is surprising things you see in the middle of nowhere.
Surprising things you see in the middle of nowhere. Go on, my friend.
Yeah, Danny, we live out on the just on the edge of the North Yorkshire Moors, so we've got some nice places to go out for Sunday drives. So one Sunday afternoon, we jumped in the car and decided, well, we won't take any maps, so I sat there, we'll just drive off into the countryside and see what we come across. So we're about an hour into the drive, just admiring the sheep and, you know, the hens, the chickens and whatnot in the fields. You know, a lot of stone walls out in that sort of area, farms all over the place. So I'm driving along. I just noticed something in the wall as I'm driving past one of these farms. So I thought, that looks a bit strange. So I put the anchors on, checked the mirror, backed up, and stopped. And to my absolute astonishment, embedded in the dry stone wall, it's a microwave oven.
Now, you don't...
I did not see that coming.
You don't think it was an original component of the wall, that someone in the 17th century...
No, that wouldn't make sense.
That doesn't make any sense. And when you say
I don't think so.
When you say it was embedded in the wall, what do you mean?
Well, it's like it's built into the wall as if it was one of the stones, but a very big stone. So it's got all the stones surrounding the actual microwave. And it's just, as if the microwave is part of the wall. It's just, we couldn't work out what it was, so we jumped out and took a couple of photographs. I didn't check if it was wired up. I was wondering, maybe it's there for you, you know, to warm up an emergency scotch egg or something like that.
Country folk, as we know, particularly in your part of the country, they always look out for each other. And the old postman, particularly in these winter months, cycling by, says, I wonder if old Ben has done what he said he'd do. And he gets a he takes a pasty from his pocket and he takes a moment and stands by that dry stone wall and has a hot pasty because of the thoughtfulness of country folk. Did you say you tried it to see if it was working?
No, we did. We just looked at it and just that was just totally astonishing. We were hungry, so we did think of putting our scotch egg in there, but no, we went off to have lunch in a nearby pub. We had Sunday lunch. But once we were sitting there talking about it, we wondered maybe because the farm's like a good drive up the track looking at it, maybe it's there because the postman could maybe put the letters in there. Maybe it's some sort of ingenious...
Oh, how brilliant.
...postage device. That's just a theory. I don't know.
No, it's a beautiful theory, and it's one we're going to investigate further. Because sometimes you see exactly that in dry stone... Oh, no, those are actually letterboxes, aren't they? In dry stone walls up that way.
Yeah, built in. Yeah,
but, well, bless you, that's a tremendous spot.
Or, back to my granddad again, it's, I've got a big hole. What fills that? The wife going, no, I do use that every day. Well, it fills the hole.
Thank you so much, Dave. That's a beaut. Not only is it practical, it came third in the Turner Prize this year. The dry stone wall with a microwave half through it. Here's a tremendous one here, Peps. This is from Richard Monitors. I was an ink monitor at school, responsible for filling those odd holes at the top of the desk. I genuinely got the role, as I tended to get more ink on me than in the ink wells. Now, this will sound Dickensian even to you, I think. Did your desk have ink?
They had ink wells, but we didn't use them.
No, as it, little,
so we used
little
to put
China
pencil
ink
shavings
wells.
In there and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's the... and I don't even know if they have desks anymore.
No, they tend to have, I think, I don't know... Because during my primary school time, we went from flip-top desks to what we called tidy trays.
How did you
have a little tray that you go and put in a cupboard and you just sit at a plain desk and you have your own little tray with your things and you go and put it in and out.
How on earth did you hold conversations? Because the only way in class you could hold a conversation was to lift up the desk and go, Dave, Baker, I'm just looking for something, sir. Dave, the only way is hiding in a desk. And of course, a desk is the only other reason for having desks in school is you can get the ruler and go... This is about the level of the show, everyone. Now, here we are on show 6. And on the last show, we didn't think we'd get here, but we did. And we're looking for advertisers and sponsors. Now, don't think I'm walking around with a begging bowl. Let me put that another way. I'm walking around with a begging bowl. At the moment, we've got a few... Bill's Hovercraft School. That doesn't sound legit, does it?
No, I wouldn't say it would affect many people's lives.
Here. We would, you know, I won't tell you they're offering. It's derisory. Bill's Hovercraft School. Dan, you'd be surprised how many people... yearn to drive a hovercraft, and so Bill's. Well, this sort of thing is going to sit halfway through the show. If I'm not going to play their advert, and we'll see what we think.
It's up and away when you learn to drive a hovercraft.
And at Bill's Hovercraft School, you'll learn on the latest equipment, trained instructors, many of them licensed by Bill himself. Get you in the air with money to spare. Bill's Hovercraft School at 45101 Roscoe Boulevard, corner of the Valley Mall Shopping Plaza, where hovercraft is a way of life.
See, I trust that. Hovercraft is a way of life. I trust that. But the bit that gets me there is our trained instructors, many of them licensed by Bill himself.
Yeah.
I don't know. It sounds like something my old man would come up with. But we'll let you know how it goes, this whole sponsorship and advertising thing. So New Zealand was discovered today, by the way.
What's it?
On the 13th of December. Now...
I'd say the people, the Maoris may
the
have something
people.
To say about that.
I always say when... that's how it was described in the thing. New Zealand discovered today in 1642. It's like if we leave here and I discover that Cadillac across the street. Oh, look, we found a Cadillac, Peps, in you get. But it was discovered today and it's always worth noticing that nobody talks about Old Zealand. New Zealand, yes. Old Zealand, no.
You know, just plain Zealand.
Zealand. Well, it is Zealand, which, of course, is in... I say, of course. What does it sound like it is?
Nordic, sort of...
It's Holland, in fact.
Oh, OK.
Zeeland, which is Sealand. And so it is named after... So there is, yes, as you quite right to say...
They went a long way, didn't they?
They did. Yes, they did. And as you say, the indigenous Maoris probably said which they hadn't bothered. But that is... So it's New Zealand Day, everybody. Something over there, perhaps.
We'll stay in Australasia. And they're part of that, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because Chris in Sydney, I gave it the in our shambolic fifth episode, I said, here's an email from Chris in Sydney, and then didn't read it out. So Chris is sitting there going, come on! I sent it in November, and particularly as many years and iterations ago, you asked for stories on the subject of smallest audiences.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
While at university in London in 1982, my best mate Andy took a casual approach to attending lectures and on his self-elected days off, went to the movies. This particular day, he went to see Gandhi at our local cinema, which was an old traditional cinema with one main screen and rather a large venue. But this, on this early afternoon in late spring, not well attended. In these days, pre-mobile phones, everyone travelled with something to read. And there Andy sat 20 minutes earlier with the choice of 500 seats in the house.
Wow.
Selecting a prime middle seat in the stalls, he settled in and eyes down engrossed in his reading. He didn't notice that nobody else was arriving. As the lights went down, he realised he was the only person in the entire audience and the film was being put on just for him. He felt a bit guilty that the entire staff had gone to such trouble just for him. Now, as you know, Gandhi is a bit long, over 3 hours, and in those days they put in an interval. So halfway through, the house lights came back up. At that point, in the deafening silence of an empty movie theatre, a very embarrassed young lady came in with a tray loaded with ice creams, drinks, ice lollies, chocolate bars, the interval snacks for 100 people.
Albatross.
She looked around, looked hopefully on the lone figure of my mate Andy, and she motioned towards her groaning tray. Andy shook his head and dejectedly she trudged out.
Oh, now you'd have to buy something. Come on, Andy. What? Andy or Gandhi, by the way? Andy's Gandhi story. Oh, no, that's done me. No matter what levels of humour, and there are several on the show, you can say Andy's Gandhi story.
Andy's Gandhi story.
Give him an honorary sap.
Oh, so...
No, I'm revoking it because you didn't buy something from the...
Okay.
When you go to the theatre...
Oh, that's so close.
Do you go to the theatre?
Yes.
Yeah, I go to the theatre. You know, what's the way?
I was ranting only the other week that I went to an all-star production at which none of the stars appeared.
Did they? Oh,
furious of Twitter I was.
But I didn't see that, but you're quite right. When you sit there and they say, owing to the indisposition of Andy from Gandhi this afternoon, his Beryl the Peril will be... No, that moment, I've been to a few productions like that. I saw Jesus Christ Superstar when it came out about 30-odd times. How about
you
this?
You did actually. Yeah, you've said this before, and I feel it's very unlike
you. I'm going to tell you something now from the one of the great bits of gossip I ever got in the green room. Mm-hmm. This would be exactly a year ago. My good friend Jimmy Carr, he is a very good friend of it. He holds the... I don't know, curl your lip like that out there, but Jimmy Carr holds the biggest showbiz parties you can imagine.
They're more like salons, aren't they?
They are like salons. Mm. How is the most connected person in showbiz? I hope I'm not embarrassing Jimmy here, but he has a couple of things every month, and for ages, he used to say, because he has them on Monday nights or whenever. And when you get there... And I didn't go for ages, and he finally went and said, I'm not going to ask you anymore. He said, I'm only asking you to come over here. You know, he said, it's a really nice night. Monday night, you know, there's a game on usually. Anyway, I said, come on, we'll go. I took my daughter, because when he said, oh, I'm going to Monday night right over, and you have to get the tube from where I am over. Anyway, but I turned up, and it was plainly well-heeled when you walk in. And there, one of his parties... Who's the Brief History of the Universe?
Oh, Stephen Hawking, yes,
Stephen Hawking.
Said,
Stephen
yes.
Hawking's there. You know, you've got your Hugh
you
Grant, Elton John,
really.
You get... It's extremely well done. But anyway, he had this one, and Andrew Lloyd Webber was there. Now, people are all, you know... But it's why I talk to anyone, of course I do. I suppose Andrew's on a podcast now saying... And I went in, and Danny Baker was in there. there's a chance. So I went over to Andrew Lloyd Webber, and I said... we started... A few of us around. I said, I saw Jesus Christ Superstar 31 times. Did you? I said, 31. I said, I was one of those who used to battle through the Festival of Light people outside. You know, those massive protests outside.
Oh, yes.
Mary Whitehouse said it was blasphemous. And you literally had to battle your way in. And I said, after the first week, I said, it even got worse. I said, it's half the fun of it. And he looked at me and he said, after the first week? I said, yeah. He went, oh, well done. He said, we stopped it after about a month. I just couldn't afford it anymore. I said, and I looked and I laughed. And he went, oh, I've not ruined things for you, have I? And I said, initially they were there. He said, but we've got every bit of publicity. Oh, he said, I'm so sorry. He organised the people on the pavement outside. Now,
why he sleeps under a quilt made of £50 notes.
Oh, I've got a great story about him and Chris I'll tell one day. It's one of the greatest showbiz... It is the greatest. It is, I think so. And Chris forgot it to put it in either of his books. Now we're just gossiping. Now we've lost sight of the podcast entirely.
Yeah.
Even the people outside are leaning in going, oh, do tell. But, what happens at Jimmy Carr's parties stays at Jimmy Carr's parties for a little bit. Something quick from over there, Peps, and then I'll bring you not only another call, because this one's okay. We're going to get the upgrade and show five.
Mm.
Maybe we'll say since it's show one from now on. Give us something from over there, then I'll bring you brilliant email we've got about meeting David Bowie, which is a subject which is always open for us. Continue.
This is from David Turner. The only autograph I ever got was from the late Sir Alec Guinness.
Oh, now we're into it. Sorry, I do apologise. I was just about to tell an Alec Guinness autograph story.
Oh,
I was just about to.
Old
my own
Indian
one.
Burial
Go
ground.
Go on, it
returns.
Is. They're paying us back today. Go on, yeah.
I had to be a bit careful, as in the books I had recently been reading, it was quite clear that if you sent him anything Star Wars related, he'd throw it in his bin. I got an A4 size print of the Ealing comedy The Lady Killers and sent it off with an accompanying letter and a stamped address envelope and waited. A few days later, the envelope dropped through my door and I tore it open to find the print duly signed by Sir Alec, and it pleased me no end. I then noticed some writing on the back of the envelope on which he had written his correct address in full and scolded me for sending a letter with an incorrect address. Sadly, I have lost the envelope during the house move, which is actually more special than the autograph.
With me leg under the table then.
That's Sir Alec.
So, do you know what? You might be right, because I was just about to say, I have, because you said earlier on, possibly the only autograph Kenneth Connor ever gave. And now I realise, I wish I had a donkey sound effect. I, many years ago, read one of Alec Guinness's books, said he never signs autographs in one of his books. I don't understand them. I don't know why people ask for them. And in my career, I may have given two or three in my lifetime. Well, about a month later, I was telling someone who was connected, they said, I'm going to get you Alec Guinness's autograph. Because, like all civilised people, I said, you can't. I got you Alec. I paid through the nose for it.
Oh.
Through the great false nose he wears in Oliver Twist. I paid through the nose for it, and now I hear that it...
David's taunting you. He sent you a picture.
Then it's like in The Likely Lads when he's convinced he's got Sherpa Tenzing's autograph. He said, even at primary school, you used to cheat me out of money. You made me pay £1 for Sherpa Tenzing's autograph, and it was a forgery. He says, how do you know it's a forgery? He said, because it said, cheers, Terry, Sherpa Tenzing. I'll tell you one more thing about autographs. No, I won't. I've got to do this David Bowie thing.
Yes, please.
Oh, no, this is good. This is really good. This is a great one. This is from Kevin in Essex. I was the monitor for reading the cards at the school nativity play at Kennington Junior School in southwest Essex. My qualification for the role is that I could read my class teacher, Mrs. Fentiman, affectionately known as Fagash Lil to all the parents, on account she was never seen without a roll-up, because she thought I was reasonably responsible for wearing a tie on an elastic on the big day. I've got no funny stories of burning the cards or having them eaten by a dog, so her faith was well placed. All I remember from my time as narrator on the nativity play is Christine Marr proudly saying, "Behold! Behold! Behold!" That was her thing. Really was there an H in the middle. And one of the three wise men waving furiously at his mum throughout the entire duration of the nativity.
Oh! I hated being narrator. Because you never got a costume. You wore your own clothes.
I mean,
what a surprise. I was the narrator.
I used to love it.
Never got to be an angel. I was never going to be Mary. I knew my limits. But, you know, not even, you know...
I was the...
carouser in the inn or anything.
I was the narrator. Not narrator. Well, I had been narrator. I could narrate, do quick change and get back on again. I could be Joseph and narrator. Very, you know, apart from the beard, I pulled it off entirely. But... I was the Mad Hatter in Alice in Wonderland, which we did as a nativity one year. Hugest prop you ever saw in your life. I had the big top hat on.
Oh, nice.
I had the big top hat on, which meant as I went out there, if you've got the biggest prop in the show, then you're doing okay. And I got the biggest laugh.
Ladies and gentlemen,
a future.
From that moment.
It really was. I had a teacup which had a perforated, Miss McKenzie had perforated a part of it. So during the court scene, I had to say the line, "Oh dear, I'm so nervous, I've bitten the piece out of my teacup instead of the bread and butter." You never heard rolls of laughter like it. They were going amongst the kids giving out oxygen. Funniest thing they'd ever heard. And I thought, hi diddly dee, I'll have some of this racket. What are you doing over there, Peps?
And we've got another caller.
Oh, have we?
We have Mike.
Or do we? Mike?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, we're back. We're back in the realm of the dead. Here's the old Mike. You've spoiled
he's
it now.
Teasing us.
Part of our ramshackle appeal is the failure of callers to appear. But Mike would rather...
I'm sorry I've let you down.
Well, so, Mike, I'm glad you weren't on the stage when I did my teacup gag. You'd have kind of you'd have upstaged me in the background. Welcome, Mike. Thank you very much for being with us, my friend. What do you have for us?
Okay, so on your podcast number one, I think it was, I think you call it the trailer, I was sitting on a beach in Mexico listening to you.
Oh.
And you talked about a guy who heard you call out his name, but of course it wasn't him, it was a different person altogether. And I've got a similar story that happened to me too.
Go on, my friend.
So I was working for a big IT, American IT company in the late 90s, early 2000s, and I was in Dallas several times a year for meetings and things like that. And so one morning I had been out for my anti-jet lag jog, come back in, had a bit of a shower, and was ironing my shirt for the day for the office, and the television was on in the news station in the background, and as I was ironing my shirt, I heard this American trailer voice shouting out, "Michael Scofield has been imprisoned and wants to break out. Prison Break.
Yeah.
New show coming soon." And it's my name.
So you hear your own name saying that you've broken out of prison.
You've
broken out of prison and your whole new series is coming soon. And you sure this isn't ego here? You literally heard your name, did you?
Absolutely, yeah.
Right,
absolutely.
Okay, so you're Michael Scofield. And how did you react to this?
Well, yeah, I was pretty surprised, and several stories, I was able to give several stories in the office about this, and everybody thought it was highly amusing, but as the years went by, I used to get greeted by hotel receptionists or car hire desks with people saying, "Oh my God, what a great name!"
Michael Scofield.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
And if I was in a restaurant, then I would get shown to a table, and the restaurant manager would come over and ask me if everything had been fine. Whereas no one else got this kind of treatment.
All on the back of this series, this
Prison Break. It is quite a big series, but the same name as a character.
They figured you were the guy from the Prison Break series.
They thought I was a fictional character, absolutely, yeah.
And
in fact, even now, it happens. A month ago, I had to go to A&E in my local hospital in Brighton, and I was sitting there kind of waiting to be seen by the doctor, and they called my name out, and these group of Stag Night lads all stood up and cheered. And I had to kind of walk past them and look at my feet, hoping that they would all go away very soon. I must say that after all these years, I've never watched the programme.
I was going to say, it's a low... Is it a low wattage? Is it, it's like
no,
a, what,
no,
it's,
it was
cable.
Quite big for a while, Prison Break.
It's not strictly, is it, if you will? It's not... I'm a celebrity. Yeah,
bear in mind, it's on Fox TV, so you kind of know where it's coming from.
But it just shows you, the hobbledy hoyers and devotees of it are so starstruck, they don't notice that he looks... Does he look anything like you?
Absolutely not. He's got tattoos all over his body.
Yeah, shaved head, tattoos.
And just briefly, what do you look like?
Well, I've still got my hair, even though I'm retired these days.
Oh, there you are. Oh, stop boasting. Okay.
Sorry about that.
No, bless you. It's a beautiful story. Thank you very much indeed, Mike.
Okay, no problem.
I must say, I've never heard it. Well, I've now you say I kind of heard of the show, but the idea you can get restaurant tables. I get the occasional restaurant table, but...
Your name, sir, Basil Forty.
Same from over there, perhaps.
Okay, this is from Big Dave. Things stuck to your head. Morning, Candyman.
Oh, I've got a good one to do.
So when my eldest was a toddler, who is now a lump of a student, he had one of those toys that you could stick to the tray on the high chair that would boing and rattle. Yes. I like this as a good reference. If you know the water tower at Gillingham Tesco's, then that's what it's
like. Oh, I see.
Like.
Okay.
One night after watching an episode of Doctor Who, I thought it would be fun to stick it on my forehead, as I am slightly follically challenged. And there I was, toy attached, running around screaming, "Exterminate!" to the amusement of my son. Oh, the fun we had. Do it again, Daddy. Only when removing said item, it became apparent that I had a very large, round, red mark on my forehead.
Big old circular love bite.
Oh, that'll go soon, I thought. No, it didn't. Next morning, red mark was even more apparent and very tender. I had to wear a hat to work. That day, and the next. 3 days for it to disappear. I left that place of work, but I imagine a few of them remember the day that I had my hat removed because it was the middle of summer and they couldn't work out why I was wearing it. My son doesn't remember it, but my wife does every time a Dalek appears on TV.
I did this subject years ago.
Big Dave, I'm not sure I gave
you. And thank you, Dave. I did this subject years ago, and the amount of, well, let's not be coy here, men who have done that thing with the sucker on the forehead. One fella, because they used to sell bows and arrows with little suckers on, and some fella put three. He was home alone. There's nothing going on. This is way before the internet and Nintendo. So he's making his own amusement. So he got three of them, licked the end, and put all three of them, and then regarded himself in the mirror, what it looked like. And, you know, he got that and cut himself a sandwich, and then thought, I'll take these off. Well, there was a little friction, but eventually... And he looked, he thought, oh... And he had these three dots across his forehead, but deep, like there were three bullet holes. And he said... And then his wife came home and went, as wives are prone to do, what you been doing? And he said, they won't go away. That part...
Which says a love bite, virtually, isn't it?
It's virtually, but apparently the skin up there retains its... I mean, a love bite. I could ask...
Come on, you'll know.
You've got 3 or 4 days of a love bite, I think, even though when I was much younger, much, much younger, I used to, between two fingers, try to keep the love bite going. Was it on your neck? Oh, that. but if I'd have known, I'd have just got myself one of the bows and arrow sets, and I could have done it for a month. This is things stuck to your head as well. This is from Cov Coxie. As a 5-year-old in the mid-70s, I had a party piece which involved racing to my bedroom to get my cowboy hat every time I heard Rhinestone Cowboy by Glen Campbell. On one occasion, I could not find this hat and used a child's toilet seat instead. It was the sort that would sit on top of the adult seat so you couldn't fall in.
Oh, yes.
Needless to say, the toilet seat stuck firmly to my head. It took large amounts of margarine, liberally applied until it eventually did slide off. But it was on there for a good hour. If I saw that in a sitcom, I wouldn't buy it, that you actually do get a toilet seat stuck to your head. Sponsor time? OK, sorry. Sponsor time again.
Oh, okay.
Oh, 1 second.
It's up, up and away when you learn to drive a hovercraft.
And at Bill's Hovercraft School, you'll learn on the latest equipment, trained instructors, many of them licensed by Bill himself. Get you in the air with money to spare. Bill's Hovercraft School at 45101 Roscoe Boulevard, corner of the Valley Mall Shopping Plaza, where hovercraft is a way of life.
Thank you very much indeed. Maybe these people are the way forward. I don't know. Sarah, it goes from here. Something from over there, perhaps.
This is from Rob, who's kind of making up his own topic.
Just before you do, sorry, Peps, before we leave the idea that the skin on your forehead can give you a love bite for 2 months, only 1 in 10,000 people, I think it is, get goosebumps on their face. Now, when you get it, I mean, you get the whole, or chicken skin, as they say in America, you get that kind of thing all over you. But some people, their face does it as well. Now, that's a horrible thing.
I don't think I was aware that I didn't, if you know what I mean.
No, I know what you mean.
Now I think about it, I don't think I do. But
if you think of something chilling, well, go back and listen to episode 5, and you get the goosebumps, but you never get them on the face. But 1 in 10,000 people do. They get the whole face wall, which is, sounds horrible. I think if you was a bloke with a beard, they would suddenly stand on end. I don't want to see things like that, but I just wanted to bring that to you. Sorry, Peps, you were saying.
This is from Rob.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned in the first show the demise of the lock-in after closing
time.
Yeah,
certainly.
And this reminded me of the one in my late dad's local, the Ferry House on the Isle of Dogs.
Oh, our man was comparing there for a while.
Well, there we go. You may well have been there this night. One of the local constabulary often played in the darts team and would be part of the lock-in. One evening, my old man was enjoying a couple of after-hours libations with a few regulars, and flashing blue lights were seen through the gaps in the curtains and a banging on the door. Any problems here? The young peeler asked. None at all, said the landlord. Just a little private gathering. The bobby asked more. You sure there's nothing we're needed for? No, all fine, thanks, officer. And with that, the boys in blue departed. Following evening, the regular copper came in and said, did you get a visit the night before? Yes, we did, said mine host. What was that about? To which the copper replied, oh, they fancied a bevy, and I told them they could get one at the ferry house. You don't need us in here. No.
There's a wonderful, inevitably old Will Hay film where down in Devon, the older clientele are in it all packed, and every night the local copper comes by, and at 10:30 as it was, they're not something. Come on, you lot. Out you go, and they go, oh, good night, Bill. Good night, Harry. Good night, Bill. And they all go out the front of the pub, and then the copper says to the owner, good night, Harry. And then he closes the door, and then the back door of the pub opens, and everyone walks back in again and takes their seats. Now, we're not going to get time to get round to this David Bowie thing because it's a two-pager. But that's throw forward to the middle of next week. It's an absolute belter. And I want to thank Ronnie for getting in touch with it. Once on my show, I asked if anyone... This is so... I don't know why. And it's never been answered because I like David Bowie stories. I don't mind any David Bowie stories. But you think all the information on Bowie's in, but it ain't. And we were trying to find if David Bowie's ever been in a skip. Now, literally, not one of his albums. And I thought we were going to get that. But this comes close to it, what he tells us. Anyway, Vicky in San Francisco.
If you please.
I know. Apologise, Vicky, for show five. But Vicky in San Francisco says, here's a subject for you. Family members who share the names of celebrities. Well, we've done many times people whose names sound a bit...
Almost
like celebrities. Tim Rice, Carolyn Monroe we've had. And the best ever at this time of the year was the priest who we got on the phone because we didn't believe it. And his name's Father Chris Moss. His name's Christopher Moss, and Father Chris Moss is out there. But Vicky's in touch, says, my gran was not an actress, nor a civil rights activist, or a burlesque dancer in a skirt made of bananas, but instead was a diminutive bingo-playing former factory girl from Aldershot. Her name was Josephine Baker.
Oh.
Isn't that lovely? But not only that, my granddad was not a suavely lecherous cad and a posh fellow, but a World War II veteran who could be found either on his allotment or at the bookies. But his name was Leslie Phillips.
Oh! What a pairing!
Two of them. The pair of them. And Leslie Phillips, I believe, married Josephine Baker. Now, that's a beautiful one. I'm going to give Vicky in San Francisco an honorary septum.
Right.
Thank you very much indeed, Vicky.
Phil takes that down.
We'll try and do one or two per show to see how that works out. And I think we're virtually at...
Shall we finish?
Something quick from
seeing as you mentioned allotment, and it's Keithy Baby.
Yeah. Oh, hello, Keithy.
Keithy Baby. As a keen veg grower, I love nothing more than pottering around on my allotment.
Good for him.
In the summer, I was watering the beans, felt something brush against my cheek, and felt nothing more of it. Carried on tending to the plants, packed up, took the crop home. When I walked in the kitchen, my wife started laughing. The brush against my cheek and the now tingling in my beard made sense. A little ladybird was curled up in my fulsome beard.
How sweet. That's beautiful. Yeah.
Oh, I was waiting for a little noise. I thought you were poised for a little ladybird noise.
You've got to realise this. At the BBC, I'd have had my lady... Oh, actually, do that last sentence again.
A ladybird was curled up in my fulsome beard.
Oh, is this... Been... Say it again.
A ladybird was curled up
in my... Give it some Wellington boot. Come on.
A ladybird was curled up in my fulsome beard.
No. Hold on. That's him going into the beard. There it is. That's it. That's perfect. I think.
Said my wife used a pair of tweezers and a comb to release the ladybird into the wild.
Oh, bless you. There's a ladybird in the beard. That's a beaut. That means the show's over. That sound in the background, which is a flea jumping. We've done nothing if not a jumping flea show. If you want to get in touch with us, we've got a phone number. Right at the end of the show, everything falls down. Everything falls down. No, the thing's frozen here. We've got no...
Man.
Oh, no.
Up and away.
Not you again. Not you. No, not you again. Please, I'm begging you. We don't want any more sponsorship from those people. Thank you very much. Let's try this. And suddenly, the show ended.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow with Shopify.
Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.